This is the World Retail Podcast, the premier platform for global retail leaders, where vision meets insight and innovation takes center stage. From AI to embedded finance, leadership to the ever-evolving consumer, we bring you the voices shaping the future of retail. World Retail Podcast, your front row seat to retail's next chapter.
Hello and welcome to the World Retail Podcast. My name is Ian McGarrigle and I'm the founder and chair of the World Retail Congress. This episode is part of our second series of podcasts produced in partnership with the global retail team at Alex Partners. This series is focused on one of the most important topics in retail today and is called AI, Hype or Reality. Over six episodes, we will bring you high-level interviews with some top retail leaders to learn more about how they are viewing and using AI in their businesses. This episode is a little bit different as we wanted to bring together a number of acknowledged experts to talk about one of the most important areas of development in AI for retailers, and that is agentic AI. To share their views on agentic AI, we were joined by Tim Roberts, leader of the cyber team at Alex Partners, Mark Steele, director, global retailer and consumer industry strategy at Google Cloud, and Michael Gabay, co-founder and CEO at Velon. And helping me lead the interview, I was delighted to be joined again by managing director and partner of Alex Partners in London, Catherine Bryan. I very much hope you enjoy this episode with Catherine and I in conversation with Tim, Mark and Michael. So, hello, Catherine. Good to see you again. Hope you're well.
Thank you very much, Ian. Very lovely to be here.
Good. And great to see you again for the last in the series, actually, of the World Retail Podcast episodes on AI hype versus reality. And I thought before we introduce our guests and begin the discussion on agentic AI, it'd be good maybe for some listeners that don't know the actual detail or even know what agentic AI is, whether you could give your perspective on what it is, why it's so important for the retail industry.
Well, I think it's a measure of how fast AI is moving that when we originally shaped this series of podcasts for the World Retail Congress, agentic AI wasn't on the list, but it very halfway through the process rapidly became clear that it needed to be added there because it's developing so quickly. What agentic AI is, it's really AI that's able to make decisions and take actions autonomously. So you can think about it as the combination of old school robotic process automation with LLMs and the ability to make judgments and craft material. Bring those two together and you have two opportunities, I think, which could both be great phenomenal opportunities for retailers, but also potentially a threat in some respects. Firstly, the ability for agentic AI or agent to actually take on activities within the business. There are many, many actions, decisions that businesses across retailers make, whether it's setting prices, negotiating with suppliers, running the supply chain, where agents could take over and form a part of the equation. But there's also a big change in how consumers are likely to behave. And I think already we're seeing retail and other sectors, customers are starting to discover product not through the traditional app or search engines, but actually through LLMs and through generative AI. And actually, that is potentially a huge opportunity, but potentially a huge threat for retailers who you perhaps could be disintermediated. So I think it's all to play for.
Yeah, no, thanks, Catherine. And as you said, that reminded me, we hadn't even discussed agentic AI when we were planning this series. So that just says a huge amount. So I think this is going to be a really valuable and fascinating discussion. So let's introduce our guests. So firstly, Tim, great that you could join us. Nice to see you. And similarly, Mark, good to see you. Thank you for joining us. And Michael. So Mark, if I can sort of start the kick us off, really, and as we've said, our series is called AI Hype versus Reality. So love to know what agentic AI means to you and how does it differ from traditional automation? And do you think, is it hype or are we seeing real examples of agentic systems being deployed? So not an easy question to throw at you to begin with, but love to get your perspective.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there.
Yes.
I love what Catherine said. I think for me, the really exciting part of agentic AI is it's the first time really we've had the ability for AI to take action, to actually problem solve, to make decisions and to take action inside of a particular task or a particular opportunity in a business. So, that's the way I think about it and the way I describe it is, agents are bringing action to AI. And it's this shift really from an AI being able to think and reason and then produce results, either creatively or summarizing information or interpreting data based on that thinking and reasoning, to now that additional step of being able to take action. And where I think it's different to kind of traditional automation is that tended to be a bit more deterministic. You know, that tended to be kind of, you know, we have a process that we want to automate or a workflow that we want to add automation to. We know the desired inputs and outputs. We know what the end state looks like. And we're going to use technology to be able to then make that happen faster without individuals needing to interact and ultimately to kind of drive value over that process. Where agentic AI really, I think, transforms that opportunity is it's AI that's actually able to solve problems inside of that type of workflow. So it no longer needs to be deterministic. You know, we can now use AI to actually think through a set of changing characteristics, a set of variables that might look very different from one moment to the next. And using that ability to think and reason, be able to then take the appropriate action, not just the predetermined action that we might have seen in kind of traditional automation. So I think it's really exciting from that perspective that, you know, inside of a retail organization, you can potentially have agents that are taking action depending on what's happening in terms of footfall that day, what's happening in terms of inventory levels, you know, how are raw material prices changing and fluctuating, and being able to solve problems and think about opportunities. So that kind of gets me excited as a former retailer. And I think the answer to your question, you know, is this hype or reality? Yes, there's a lot of hype. And yes, I think there's a lot of reality as well, which is, you know, where it gets a bit more exciting. I do think there's a temptation right now to add agentic to anything that's related to AI. And so we've seen a lot of examples perhaps where, you know, kind of traditional predictive AI is now being labeled as agentic AI. And I'm not sure that's necessarily the case. But what's really interesting is I do think we're seeing lots of examples now of real agentic AI. In other words, AI taking action inside retail businesses that's in production, either in front of colleagues or in front of customers, and starting to be scaled. So, you know, in areas like customer service, for example, which I think, you know, from my conversations is a place a lot of retailers have started, we're genuinely seeing agents responding to customer demand, taking action, solving problems for customers, and ultimately improving that experience. So I'm excited to see how it scales over time, but it's definitely a reality.
And actually, to Catherine's point that we hadn't actually been discussing agentic AI as being part of this podcast series, which really isn't that long ago, what has happened? Has there been some real breakthrough that suddenly has now made this the kind of the area that everyone is now focused on?
Yeah, I think it feels like there's a breakthrough almost every day at the moment. I mean, I don't know what your feeling that one is, but I find it hard to keep up. You know, and I'm working inside an organization like Google where we're talking about this, you know, every moment of the day. And, you know, the pace of the breakthroughs, the pace of the development of this technology is just breathtaking and it's exciting. Where I'm more interested, though, and where I get most exciting is how's it going to help retail? You know, retail's an industry I've spent my life in. I love it. And, you know, I really get excited about where this will actually make a difference for retailers. So, it's moving very fast. And I think that's often, therefore, raises the question for retailers, you know, where do I start? How do I get going? And I'm sure we'll come to some of those topics, but it's definitely starting to deliver.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Mark. And Michael, I'll bring you in here.
Many
of the listeners may not know Vellon. Could you give a quick snapshot of the business, how your AI agents are helping retailers today? What's your ambition?
Sure. Ian, regarding your last question, I would say that we couldn't even, establish Vellon a year ago. The technology Vellon established on it exists, maybe 1 year, not more than that. So Vellon, we are developing, we call it AI employees for large retailers and CPG companies. For us, AI employees, it means that they can, they do tasks from A to Z. They are autonomous AI employees. Of course, not real employees, but it's that you can speak to them, they can run the current software of the organization, and of course they can talk and negotiate with external companies, suppliers of the retail. It's not ChatGPT system or, you know, systems that you ask question and get answer. it's a system that does the work for you. It's not an assistant or co-pilot on or anything like that. We're now we already have a first employee called Natalie deployed, and we are now also developing a few more employees. Natalie, she's a category manager. She analyzes the data from data sources in the market, plans strategy for negotiation, and she negotiates for the company. She actually do it autonomously. We are starting with the paradox of the long tail, also I would say the mid zone between the long tail and the strategic negotiation for the retailer, that everybody knows in the retailer that today they can't negotiate with all of those small suppliers. But overall, it's very large. I mean, when you combine all of the small suppliers together, it could be for some of our customers, it's billions of dollars every year that they're not negotiating today. And each deal is not very big, but overall, we can save for them hundreds of millions of dollars every year just from starting to doing it. We're also developing Bob, tactical buyer, that is going to do all of those tactical stuff, you know, to send the PO, to insert the data into the ERP, all of those things that take hours every day. And Sophie, also another AI employee that we are developing, to help them manage the supplier, to add new supplier to the organization. We know that today, on average, for every retailer, it can take a few months to add a new supplier to their direct supply chain for the stores, and the idea to do it autonomously and automatically for them. And they're planning to develop another 20 employees in the next 2 years for the entire supply chain planning and logistics.
Thank you. I'll bring Mark back in here. Beyond negotiations, which Michael's talked about, where are you actually seeing retailers use agents elsewhere in their operations? And I'm interested in your observation around the capabilities and expertise that businesses need to build in order to work well with them.
Yeah, I mean, I think these are the real questions in terms of, you know, how do you drive value with agentic AI and how do you get past that hype cycle that Ian talked about? I think there's a couple of kind of angles that I always come at that question from. There's a sort of perspective which a lot of folks tend to call use cases, you know, kind of what are the use cases? I'm not a big fan of that term use case. I prefer to talk about value. Where's the business value? Where is the opportunity? And then the sort of second level is, how do you make sure that you are kind of governing this technology at the same time as providing opportunities for individuals and teams around the organization to take advantage? So I think in terms of those, you know, where are the opportunities to drive business value? I mean, we're seeing it really across the value chain in retail. So I mentioned customer service previously. That's definitely an area we're seeing a lot of activity from retailers. You know, it's a high cost line in a lot of retail businesses. And also it's an area that's critical for customer experience. So whether that be, you know, agents that are actually responding to customer contacts or supporting and coaching the human agents to do even, you know, to give even better responses. That's one area. We're seeing agentic AI being deployed a lot inside of the marketing organization. So for areas like campaign optimization, how can I make sure that every single dollar worth of marketing investment is really delivering the best return on that ad spend? But also, you know, in a number of areas that are customer facing. So your shopping assistance is an area that we're starting to see a lot of innovation. And if you think about, you know, this opportunity is, how can I help customers to find the right product for them to solve their need more precisely? It's giving that opportunity to kind of drive personal service, particularly in an e-commerce setting, which has, you know, always been difficult to bring that kind of personality to. It's allowing us to take that to the next level. So I think there are a number of areas on a sort of consumer front, but also, you know, some of the things Michael talked about, we are definitely seeing agents being deployed in merchandising, you know, in inventory management, in better predicting and mitigating supply chain reductions and impact. So, yeah, lots of different parts of the business, like I said, really focused on where is the value opportunity. Either there's a kind of a growth opportunity, it's driving the top line, or maybe there's an optimization opportunity, there's some kind of sort of profit opportunity. On the second front, this idea of sort of, you know, the kind of guardrails and platform, I think this is the other area where we're seeing lots of focus from retail businesses right now. And I think it's this fine balance between We want to put AI and agents in particular into the hands of our teams around the business, because no one knows better how agents could transform marketing than the marketing team. Let's get it into their hands. Let's get them innovating and testing and experimenting and really understanding how it can change the way they do their work and unlock more creativity, productivity, whatever it might be. But at the same time, doing that in a way that is safe and secure in the organization, where teams only have access to the data that's important to them, where you can manage agents that are created in the business, agents that are created at a corporate level, third-party agents from the likes of Google and others. And so, I think it's that combination of kind of democratizing access, but at the same time doing that in a really kind of safe and secure way, which I know we'll come on to. But yeah, it's being applied very quickly. And I think across sort of generative AI and agentic AI in particular, the rate of deployment just seems to be getting faster and faster as kind of people really buy into it, I suppose.
And can I pick up on one of the things you mentioned there, which was around the customer shopping agent? I know you speak with many retailers, as do I. What are you hearing about how customers are changing their behavior? How much are they yet starting to shop differently using agents, and how quickly do you think that might take off? Is it changing their expectations?
Yeah, hugely so. I think we're seeing consumer expectations change and rise at a rate we've never really seen before. My view as someone who spent a long time in e-commerce in particular, is that we've never really seen this level of sort of transformation in the way consumers expect to interact with their favorite brands, and certainly not at this rate before. So I think it's a consequence of, this technology is in the world around us. We're all using it. We're kind of experimenting. We're using AI in our daily lives. And for example, the Gemini app from Google, and I think there are a couple of others available as well, but people, using apps like Gemini to be able to write prompts and ask long questions and, in most cases, getting good positive responses and enjoying that kind of experience. And we're seeing this, kind of idea of experience transference, so that as I'm engaging more with AI in other parts of my digital life, then I'm expecting those same benefits when I talk to a brand or a service provider that is also important to me, and in our case for retail. So, when I've been used to, writing long questions and getting rich answers, and then I arrive at a retailer's e-commerce site and I have to go back to that mindset of typing two keywords to try and find the right category, it's just not something that consumers are going to continue to expect. So we're seeing this expectation rise and this rapid change. I think also it's probably the first major technology shift, certainly, in our lifetimes, where in retail, the consumer expectation is ahead of the retail application of the technology. If you think about the shift to e-commerce or the shift to mobile and apps, usually that kind of was a retailer embracing that technology and almost pushing that out to consumers as, hey, look, there's a really new app, download our app, here's all the value you could get, here are the reasons why you might want to shop with us in this new way. I think with AI, consumers are already there, and consumers are now starting to vote with their hard-earned cash to say, well, I'm expecting these experiences. And if you're not there, we're not going to shop with you. So it's definitely driving this, like I said, kind of longer queries, more questions, more complex questions. Multimodality is a big part of what we're seeing. So I want to be able to show you the world around me. I want you to understand my context so you can better serve me as a retailer that I trust. And obviously, pictures tell 1,000 words. So I think multimodal conversation seems to be the big shift. And I think the final thing that we've seen in the context of those conversations is this idea of product discovery and customer service coming together. So we're kind of seeing this whole sort of product discovery journey being redefined right before our eyes. And I think we'll get to a world, and who knows, but where this idea of, I kind of search for something and I get to a list of products, then I get to a product details page, and then I might go to the checkout, that kind of linear funnel type of product, I think that's going, and no longer are we going to have a search box at the top and a bottom right, you might click for customer service or live chat. Consumers are just saying, look, I just want to ask questions. I want you to know me better and I want you to cater for my needs. And I don't think most retailers are there yet. So that's the challenge.
I think that's right. And I'm certainly working with and talking to organizations who are actually fundamentally rethinking how they optimize their content for discovery, and sort of marketing optimization is now, it's a very different game now to what it was 6 months ago, looking at optimizing for discovery. I completely agree. It's an exciting space to be at the moment. Michael, if I bring us back just a little bit more grounded for a moment, how are you thinking about developing agents for use internally in a retailer such that they're actually useful, practical to deploy, driving value rather than simply sort of an interesting demonstration, which I can imagine might otherwise happen?
Yeah. So I think it's all about the outcome. I think outcome, and of course, always, I mean, when you work with retailers, about the ROI. Right? ROI is the king. So I think the idea is to come to the current workflows and to integrate to the current workflows. We are not imagining new workflows, something different than what they do today. We are coming and integrating into the current workflows, but doing it the same thing, but with AI. I think the good thing about, and the entire way we imagine it is different than the software, or I would say the SaaS from the last, the SaaS world for the last 20, 25 years ago. So it's the way we charge retailers is more, it's pay as you go. I mean, if you use it a lot, you pay a lot. If you're not using it, you're not pay almost anything. The thing is that every task that the AI employee, the AI agent are doing, you should see an ROI. You should see the outcome. So it's it's not a gimmick. It's demonstrations, and it's nice, and there's always a wow moment when you see the AI employee doing something that is super sophisticated, that for humans can take even 2 weeks to analyze complex data, to take few data sources, to do something super complex for the AI employee can take few seconds. So it's a wow moment, but it's also very practical and should be something that inserting into the current workflow of the company.
What you were saying, Michael, and picking up on what Mark was saying about the customer interaction with AI and agents, and you just touching on there how people within the workforce react to it. And I was fascinated that you give your agents names, so yes. That human element. But I mean, what's the kind of the human reaction that you're finding within organizations? I mean, yes, I can see that people see the efficiencies, but are you having any pushback from organizational people within organizations?
I think not from the organization, sometimes from people, but mm-hmm. I think when people understand first that we're not coming to replace them, first thing, we're coming to do things that they just can't do. I mean, nobody can negotiate with tens of thousands of suppliers. They just abandoned them today. And the organization, by the way, also the supplier loses money because of the fact that they're not negotiating with them. So they are not buying, they could buy much more from the supplier. So there's a lot of incentive also to the supplier to join and be part of it. But I would say that when people understand that it comes to help them, to make them, first, the organization to save a lot of money, to be much more efficient, but also for the people to become much more productive. I think they accept it and they want it because they understand that now they can in a moment start to send questions and get answers and work with 10 suppliers in parallel and even for one specific negotiation. And it won't take them days, it would take them just a few seconds to do that.
Yeah. One follow-up question, how are suppliers responding? How do suppliers feel negotiating with an agent? And have you yet reached a position where there's two agents negotiating with each other?
Not yet. By the way, one of our customers said that we also need to establish Nolev, the opposite of Velon. Actually, the suppliers loved it. Loved it because the first use case is to go to small suppliers that today our customers give them one hour every year for the negotiation. And during the year, there's a lot of fluctuations, a lot of changes in the prices, and the large retailers, and we are now approaching to very large retailers. This is our first customers, our first customers. So the suppliers, they have also a lot of motivation to start, because now there is a communication, not just negotiation when somebody try to push somebody else to the lower price. It's a communication between the large company and the small supplier. They can agree now on new terms based on things that change in the market. So many times it's the supplier that comes to the retailer and say, "Hey, I need to raise the price." And the retailer, if they have a good reason to do that, for the retailers, we are now serving them in order to also to improve the terms for the supplier, and the retailers want that. Otherwise, the supplier will not supply them what they want.
Okay, I'm going to turn to Tim now. We've mentioned safety and risk and the need to think very carefully about rolling these out. What do you see the biggest risks are facing businesses when it comes to agentic AI, and how do you think about the governance that needs to be in place?
Thanks, Catherine. I'll try and avoid this being a sudden lurch towards the glass half empty view of the world, because I am still very excited about the opportunities for innovation. I think, as you would expect, though, I'm thinking we need to stretch our imagination around how we manage the risks and what are the risks, in the same way we're stretching our imagination around what we can use these tools for. First of all, maybe taking a step back from agentic, rewinding a few months to when we were not using that word in every sentence and just thinking about the risks of AI. We've talked a lot about how it's useful to distinguish between existing risks that have been turbocharged by AI and new risks that are specific or idiosyncratic to AI. And in the first, we're talking about things like the ability to fraud, to defraud people with deep fakes, to socially engineer people's credentials in a much more efficient way. There's all sorts of ways in which the bad guys, the hackers, the fraudsters, etc., can use AI tools. But in a way, that's about building our current defenses better. More interesting, I think, for this conversation is the new risks. And that's really at the heart of the intrinsic feature of AI, is that you're no longer building deterministic models. You know, when we think about, in banks, there's a function called model control. And that's all about, just doing the maths to make sure that the model gives you good and reliable inputs. And the whole philosophy around model control in that world, in that pre-AI world, is test the hell out of the model before you deploy it, then you deploy it. And you periodically check it afterwards, but it's the onus is heavily on what you do before you deploy it. Because it's deterministic, and you're going to be able to find out, as if you test it properly, whether it delivers the right outputs. Now we're in a world where we don't know for all time what kind of outputs we're going to get from an AI tool. And that gives rise to hallucinations, biases, unexpected or undesirable outputs that are not based on truth or the factors, that we set for ourselves. There's lots of great examples. In the retail space, my favorite is the New Zealand supermarket chain and its recipe planner that allowed you to put ingredients into the recipe planner and get a lovely recipe, and started creating toxic recipes like chlorine gas, probably because kids were writing incongruous ingredients. But if you sell chlorine for the swimming pool and you can therefore write it in, you've got to prepare yourself for the fact that it might tell you how to make a toxic gas in your kitchen if you don't put in some kind of guardrail around that. That's not impossible, but in the rush to bring these things to market, of course, we don't necessarily put in place the appropriate guardrails. And that, of course, becomes more complex when you're talking about agentic tools, because it's one thing if you're using a generative AI to generate an output, a recipe, or a piece of customer advice, or a product selection. It's another if it's doing a task and the output, the thing it's generating, isn't immediately visible. It's a step in the task. So the hallucination may be invisible. It may be embedded somewhere in the task. And that creates something that is. It requires a new kind of control. It requires us to think differently about how we manage and monitor that. And my sense is we're shifting from a world of preventive controls, like model testing before they get deployed, to a world where we have to do more monitoring and rapid response of our tools. And the analogy I'd use, actually, this may be too grand, is moving from the way banks think of testing things before they're deployed, products or models, to the way healthcare providers and airlines think, which is you can't fully test something before it goes into production. You actually have to monitor very actively what's going on, what the operating theater or the aeroplane is doing, or the maintenance hangar of the aeroplane is doing, and be really good at spotting the something that's not working well and is not being not delivering the complete task or is delivering an anomalous outcome. So I think less prevention, less upfront testing, and more, well, maybe not less, but rely more on monitoring the outputs, be very quick at stopping a recipe going out, stopping an agent from operating if it goes rogue. I'd obviously love to know what Michael thinks about this. I'm accusing his tools of going potentially going wrong. But I think it's a shift in mindset from preventive to responsive and reactive controls that is going to be a challenge for some companies. And the more you're like a bank or something that's been around for a long time, the harder it is to change the nature of your controls and the nature of governance. While I have the microphone, I think there's other types of risk to think about as well. Those are sort of the risks you get when you deploy these things. There's some other risks around how do you decide where and how to deploy agentic tools and how much money to spend on all of this. I think when a fundamentally radically new technology comes in, if I, you know, I'm old enough to remember the dot-com boom and the dot-com bust, there were a lot of firms that spent a lot of money on these emerging technologies that they weren't ready for, or they let a thousand flowers bloom and they spent too much money, or they spent it in the wrong places. So I think there's also a need to have a risk-taking strategy if you're the board, as well as making sure we're risk managing the agentic tools and the applications we create. I as a board member, I want to know where and how do we want to do this? How many flowers do we want to bloom? How many bets to place? And how big should those bets be? Maybe we want to watch and be a fast follower, or maybe we need to move really fast because we're going to be the next Kodak if we're not quick. I put a lot of things on the table there. I'll pause.
Yes. A lot of things on the table. Mark, I'd love your advice on you. How do you advise clients, or how do you think about helping businesses strike that balance between wanting to move fast but do so safely? What advice do you give?
I mean, I think it depends on the individual retailer. And I think, you know, I completely agree with all of the points Tim's raising. There's so much to think about here. And, you know, not unlike any other new area of innovation inside of a retail organization, particularly one where, you know, this is connected to data that lives within inside the organization. It's often connected to consumers' experience. You know, it's often, you know, enabled across multiple parts of the organization. So, you know, when we talk to retailers about how to deploy this technology, you know, I guess, like I said earlier, we're thinking about how do you drive value, but how do you do that in a way that you can kind of scale responsibly and that you can manage and mitigate some of those risks that Tim talked about there. That's why I mentioned earlier, you know, actually thinking about the governance of the technology is as important as thinking about the value that it will drive. And, you know, we've, as Google, you know, had a set of responsible AI principles since 2018. And one of the things that I always encourage retailers to be thinking about is, what are your responsible AI principles? You know, where will you use this? Where will you not use this? Where do your stakeholders, you know, consumers, shareholders, board members, competitors, where will they expect you to use this technology, and where should you not? So I think it's an individual response to a kind of broad question for each different retailer, but certainly, you know, it's a much more holistic question than just how quickly can we deploy stuff. That said, one of the other risks is, you know, the kind of opportunity risk, you know, and as we talked about at the start of our conversation today, this technology is moving very quickly. It is being deployed very rapidly. And so if I was part of a retail board today, alongside all those questions that Tim's just talked about, I'd also want to be asking, how do we get competitive advantage from this? You know, how does this drive market share for our business in the right way with the right type of, you know, kind of controls and safeguards? And I think probably the only other point I would make is that, you know, this is, in my experience, not often a wholesale replacement of the existing ways of working in the organization. We talk a lot to retail customers here at Google Cloud about, you know, experimentation, about testing, and about how humans, all of us, remain critical to deploying really great agentic AI. So, you know, this might be about how can AI take action on behalf of the things that I want to achieve as a colleague inside the business, and that, you know, there is still a human in the loop, quote unquote, to be able to validate some of those earlier responses. And then maybe, you know, you start to kind of deploy more broadly and scale more broadly once you're convinced that you have the right information. And, you know, how do you make sure that this technology is grounded in organizational truth so that you can reduce and mitigate those hallucinations, and, you know, and you're only sharing information with customers that is 100% accurate? You know, if I'm buying food and I want to know the allergens inside of the ingredients inside of a product, that has to be 100% fact. You know, it can't be just what the large language model thinks might be the answer. So being able to ground it in the right enterprise data and the right organizational data, and knowing when to use that data only, or when to use that data plus sort of wider knowledge that the model might bring, is a key component. So I think there's a lot to it. And it's, you know, it is striking that balance of, you know, innovation and, you know, trying to drive competitive advantage and trying to drive growth in a world that's moving so quickly, but doing that in a safe and secure and responsible way.
I couldn't agree more, actually. And if I just build on that, I actually also suspect that AI and agentic AI can play a role in strengthening your ability to handle risk, sort of strengthening your cybersecurity, strengthening risk management more generally. Tim, I wondered if you wouldn't mind sharing your thoughts on that area.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, going back to pre-agentic tools, I thought for a long time machine learning is a fantastic use case for a lot of different types of risk management, where you're monitoring movements of money, new account openings, movements of data, all sorts of things you're monitoring inside a company or any type of organization to see if something anomalous is going on. And you get lots of false positives from old-fashioned monitoring systems, whether it's for cyber or anti-money laundering or what have you. Machine learning is brilliant at getting, you know, making that more efficient and more effective. Agentic AI tools offer a fascinating opportunity to basically be all over the network all the time, looking for, you know, logons that are suspicious, data movements that are suspicious, even actually just somebody accessing data where it's not clear that they should be accessing that data, you know, privacy controls, as well as for security controls. That, I think, is a wonderful opportunity. The challenge then is, how do you know those tools are doing what you expect them to do and they're really managing your risk? So, again, we've talked a lot in the past about human in the loop, but it feels to me like it may be that we need not humans monitoring agents, because that stops being feasible. Once you start scaling, we need agents watching agents. And you've heard me say this before, I think my favorite movie is I, Robot, when Will Smith says at one point, robots monitoring robots is stupid. Well, actually, maybe it's not, because independent agents monitoring other agents isn't stupid at all, because you can see a reduction in risk. You've got uncorrelated models monitoring each other. So actually, I think agents offer us the possibility to have multiple layers of oversight. So we may actually achieve better security, better prevention of financial crime than we've ever seen before.
By the way, this is one of the reasons why we are calling it AI employees and not AI agents, because we have Natalie. One Natalie is a complex of around 100 agents. So one agent write the email, another agent, you know, test the email and see that she didn't write anything wrong. So so I completely agree. And one more thing that we call it user in the loop and not the humans in the loop. And for the retailers, it's very important that humans are always in control. So humans can take control. And at the end of the day, it's the responsibility of the humans, of the real employees, to sign on the agreement, to agree on the final terms. It's not like today completely the employees are doing everything. At the end of the day, the real employees will need to sign on the agreement and to agree, but the employees will do the entire workflow for them.
Lee, you were saying about the negotiations that I think you said that someone has to sign it off. Because I was going to ask you, will yes. AI employees reach a conclusion on a negotiation and sign it off, or does it does still need a human to sign? Yeah.
So on the agreement, the humans are signing. The employee will do everything until that moment. And that's what we are doing today.
Right. Yes. Thank you.
So let's come on to the people and organizational dynamics quickly, because we'll only get value if people adopt it and we start using it. And Michael, from your perspective, how do you think organizations need to adapt to get the value from AI? And what advice do you give around handling any internal pushback or challenges?
I think that first, any organization needs to think about first where employees or agents can do massive work at scale where today they just can't. So this is where I think employees will not push back, because they know that no organization will spend or invest so much money on so many people to do things that they are not doing today. So that's the first thing. And second, when people see how much productive they become when those tools are implemented, they understand that they will have now more time to spend on their expertise, and they will become more expert in what they do. When somebody else do all the repetitive task of writing emails and send messages but the conclusion will come to them, and they will need to make the decision, the final decision for the employees. So I think they when people understand or realize that they'll have now more time to become more expert, then they accept it.
Yeah, and Mark, I'd love your thoughts on this. I'm sure that's true in many cases. I'm sure there are many others who are quite nervous and feel quite threatened by the idea of agents joining the organization. Mark, how do you think organizations should prepare the people and culture to adopt this, get the best out of it, sort of in a safe, managed way, as we've described?
Yeah, I think it's one of the most underestimated parts of this transformation, in all honesty. We get very excited about the technology, which is, absolutely right. But ultimately, retail is a people industry, both in terms of the people who are working it and obviously all of us that shop in some way, shape or form. So, I often kind of talk about three things, really. Firstly, get people using AI in your organization. Put the tools in the hands of people that can actually make a difference with this technology. So many organizations, because they're very focused on risk, have kind of kept it into a tightly knitted group, and only those that need to have access, and then very carefully kind of drip feed this tech out. Yes, we need to be safe. Yes, we need to make sure that data is managed well in particular. But like I said before, the best people that understand how this technology can transform their business are the ones that actually work in that area day in, day out, and they know what changes are needed. And I think also alongside that, invest in training and development. It isn't okay, in my opinion, just to say, here's some great new AI tool, go use it. But what are we doing to help people understand? How does the technology work? How do you get the most out of it? What does writing a good prompt look like? How do you use generative technology to create content? So, invest in some kind of organizational development program. And within that, in particular, learning for leaders. I spend a lot of time talking to boards of retail organizations, and so often, they're the folks that know the least about this technology, because they have teams of people that do great work for them. So they kind of go, well, I've allocated this to my A team. And my challenge is always, how many hours a week are you investing into learning about this technology, how it can change your business? So I think there's a kind of learning and development piece. I think put it in the hands of people. And then finally, and probably most crucial, there's a real choice in terms of the way you implement this technology, I think. And there's a choice about whether you choose to be incremental or transformational. And what we're seeing in a lot of cases right now is AI and agents in particular being deployed against existing workflows and existing processes. And that's fantastic. There is a great opportunity to be more efficient, and get that kind of 10% benefit. But to really drive 10x instead of 10%, to really be transformational, the challenge for us is to rethink those workflows, rethink the way people get work done, and consider how could AI help us to do this completely differently to the way it looks today. And not many that I've seen are doing that. There are one or two, but I think that's where the real opportunity is. And that can only come from people, from great people who understand the business and can actually think through how this could look very different in a year's time.
I think that's right. And to use a very overused analogy, think about a sort of another new general purpose technology that's come into play, sort of electricity being introduced. It took about 50 years for factories, processes to reinvent themselves for the electric era. And they started by doing exactly what we're doing now with AI, which is changing how bits of the process worked, and eventually completely redesigned end to end how the factory is designed, the workflows, etc. And I suspect we're going through the analogous process now.
Yes, most likely.
So I think we're getting towards the end. Michael, your parting thoughts on what excites you and what advice would you give to CEOs and leaders today on this topic?
I think what excites me is that, 2.5 years ago, ChatGPT was introduced and Gemini, and it was a shocking moment. But today, just, it's a tool. I'm using ChatGPT and Gemini, I think about 50 times a day, in my work, but also in my daily life. And I think that in 2 years we should expect something similar with AI employees. That that it would just become a tool, something that people are using it, and in a massive scale. So that's what excites me. I think that. Nobody today think about using fax, right, or physical mail. I think that in sooner than later than what people are thinking, will not even think of, send a lot of emails to suppliers or even to write emails. Somebody will do it for us. And many of the workflows that today we're doing by ourselves, the technology will do for us. So that's what excites me when... that I think that in a matter of two years, it just become, a commodity for companies to use it in a massive scale.
So final question to Tim. If you're advising a retail CEO today, what would you say? Where should they start? Where should they focus their efforts? I think you were spot on in terms of that the point you made earlier around needing to decide where to invest and where not to.
Yeah, well, I think... and echoing something that's already been said, I think we need education. This is all moving very quickly, and it's very hard, I think, for a lot of boards to get their heads around what this means. So I think, and to paraphrase something the head of the National Cybersecurity Agency said, we need some deep experts, but we also need everyone else to get a bit more literate on this. So we need deep experts, but we mustn't confine this to that laboratory as if it was a sort of dangerous thing that needs containing. We need everyone to understand enough about it that they can think about, like your electrification example, actually. Everyone needs to think about what electricity means for their business. So same here. What, you don't need to know how to build an agent to know enough to say, is this something where we could use an agent? Could we make this better, faster, cheaper, quicker, more delightful to the customer with some kind of agent? And as long as you can then have a dialogue like that, then you've set yourself up to be able to pick the right use cases. Sorry, I'm using the phrase we banned earlier. But I also highly agree then, what we're looking for is not use cases, it's business opportunities, things we want to make better in our business. We can join in, if we know enough about it together, we can join in the search for things we want to do better, and then bring the deep experts together with the business people.
Fabulous. Well, this has been an outstanding conversation. I think we could carry on for a couple more hours if we were allowed the time. But from me, thank you so much, Tim, Mark and Michael, for such an engaging discussion.
Yeah, Catherine, yeah. Have to add to that. It's been a great conversation. And I think, as we said at the outset, this is a really exciting new sort of era that we're in. And I think this conversation has reiterated that. And Michael, I was struck by the fact you said you couldn't have launched Velon just a year ago. And that's how fast the technology has moved. Yeah. And Mark, you were saying how the customers are embracing it. And I think that's something that retailers need to sit up, that your customers really do love what agentic AI. I wish they wouldn't call it that, but they know the services it's bringing. And again, Mark, you were saying there's a real capacity and potential to really change the organizational structure of retail for the better. So I think, we could have many more of these conversations, and this has been fascinating. So Catherine, thank you also for co-hosting this. So, Mark, Tim and Michael, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a great episode, a great episode to end the series. Thank you to Alex Partners for your support. Thank you all very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the World Retail Podcast, part of our special series, AI Hype versus Reality, brought to you in partnership with the global retail team at Alex Partners. We hope today's conversation gave you valuable insights into how AI is shaping the future of retail. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave us a review. It really helps others find the show. To stay up to date with the latest from the World Retail Congress and to access more exclusive content, visit us at worldretailcongress.com and follow us on LinkedIn. We'll be back soon with more thought-provoking discussions from the front lines of retail. Until then, thanks for listening.